We're going to come back in a moment with Marty Rosenblatt and talk about telepathy and remote viewing, one of our favorite topics, next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, get ready for this. Marty Rosenblatt has a MS degree in physics from UCLA. He worked for 35 years in areas of high energy physics using computational techniques. Currently the president of the Applied Precognition Project, which is a follow-up to Physics Intuition Applications that he founded back in 1998 to apply precognitive remote viewing to predicting stock market and sporting event outcomes. Both of these events, we could have used you right now, Marty. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you, George?
Good, good. What did you think of the Super Bowl, first of all? Did you predict that one?
We did not do that one. It wasn't sort of on our regular schedule, but that was quite a game, wasn't it? That was unbelievable.
It was a great game. I mean, yeah, it was really exciting. Fun. And, you know, I'm glad for Philadelphia because they had never won one before, and New England's a superb, great team. But it's kind of nice to have some team win for the first time ever.
I agree. And to have it happen that way, amazing. Quite a game.
Well, the stock market has been taking it on the chin lately. What's going on, Marty?
Well, you know, I can't answer that directly, but what I can tell you is the way we do it, we just picked off, and we happen to do that today, just a little piece of these big moves. I mean, this volatility is rather incredible. You don't see those kind of moves obviously very often.
Huge swings.
Yeah, huge swings. But see, our technique puts in, well, compared to these swings, relatively small swings either up or down. So we predict either an up or down swing of, say, 0.5% or something like that and put in stops and limits.
Now your prediction, is it based on data or is it based on remote viewing predictions?
Right. It's precognitive remote viewing. That's exactly what it is. We call it associative remote viewing because it's associated with either an up or a down. But what it is the application of remote viewing to looking into the future.
I met you a couple of years ago at an RV convention, didn't I? Remote viewing convention.
Yep.
That's right.
Time we met. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. What a great organization. Great people there. John Alexander and all those folks.
Yep, I agree.
Let's talk about various areas. I want to talk about the precognitive remote viewing, time travel, telepathy as well. My late aunt was huge into telepathy. She was a psychiatrist and devoted her entire practice to studying telepathy. She was obsessed with it. Dr. Shafika Karegula. She wrote a book called Breakthrough to Creativity.
Isn't that interesting?
She,
yeah.
She was into this in a big way. But tell me about telepathy. What is your take on just what it is?
Okay. So I'm glad we're sort of past the point of accepting it. A lot of people will still not accept telepathy, and there have been lots and lots of experiments. And okay, so let's go past that. One of the first books, though, on it was by Upton Sinclair, and it was called Mental Radio, way back in 1930. And Einstein even wrote something nice about it. But notice the words mental radio. We are well past that in understanding telepathy. It's not radio waves or anything like that that's going between two people. I believe, and this comes mostly from seeing, you ready for this? Precognitive telepathy.
Hmm.
Because that is what we do when we do precognitive remote viewing. Because a viewer basically goes down into, I call it a universe of collective consciousness. So he goes down deep into his own consciousness. Down from there, he moves, if you will, forward in time and gets the information from himself at feedback because he's going to see this picture, this photosite. And so it's precognitive, but in this case, it's telepathy with himself in the future. And I really think that's the proper way to look at it.
How does it work?
Well, I can give you my model.
I mean, everybody who is involved in telepathy probably has their own views on how it works.
Right. That's good, because then I will give you my view.
Okay. Fair enough.
The consciousness is fundamental. I think we're hearing that from more and more places, but that goes way back to the guys who started quantum mechanics. Okay, they realized, in fact, I think it was Max Planck who said you can't get behind consciousness. In other words, you can't explain consciousness. It is the fundamental. Now, the implications of that are that a lot of the paranormal phenomena, if not all, can be explained if you make the physical world, and there is an objective physical world, I'm not taking anything away from that, but if you say it arises from a place of deep consciousness that I believe is connected with the zero-point energy field. Because in our physical world, no matter where you are, when you get small enough, you know, very, 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 very small, you get into the zero-point energy field, which all physicists accept, a large amount of energy there. Our whole physical world comes from there. Zero-point energy field is everywhere in our physical world. But now think of that as the interface with this universe of collective consciousness that contains every conscious moment of every sentient being in the universe, past, present, and future.
It knows what we're thinking, doesn't it?
It has what we're thinking, what we're feeling, what we're sensing. It's contained in there. You know, it's, and at least that's the way I think about it. It's contained in there, but through your subconscious, you're connected down there, and based on something as subtle as intention, you then entangle, which is another actually quantum mechanical word, you entangle with what you intend to. So mental telepathy is just that. One person, let's say the sender, is connected with this universe of collective consciousness. The intention is to go to a sender. The sender is also connected to this universe of collective consciousness, the UCC. And it's like a handshake between the two of them in this UCC, and then the subconscious brings it up.
A lot of people who have been abducted by what they believe to be extraterrestrials or even visitations say, I never hear a voice physically. I hear it in my head telepathically.
Absolutely. You know, imagine if you were speaking an entirely different language as someone else, just planet Earth, and I do want to talk about the ETs as well, but
sure.
Planet Earth. If you were to use telepathy, you would have different words, different sounding words, different expressions, but to the extent that each of the two experiences were the same, the communication would be nonverbal. It would be the thing which each person understood in their own way, and that's what would be transmitted. I don't know, did that make sense? In other words, ETs might not know English at all, but at least the ones, you know, with two arms and two legs, if they wanted to transmit, would you pick up an object, or are you sitting down, or would you please sit down, and there was a chair there, well, they understand what it means to sit down, and they would then telepathically be able to tell the person to sit down in the sense of understanding mm-hmm. the meaning of those words. What they're transmitting telepathically is the meaning of the words, and each person interprets that in their own way, but it's the same thing. So I could see where an ET would tell somebody to sit down, but they wouldn't do it with words. They would do it telepathically, and the human understands what it means to sit down, and so they would sit down.
Do you think that the ability to have telepathy is natural? Are we born with it, or is it something we acquire later on in life?
No, I think it's natural. It's one of those capabilities that sometimes comes out spontaneously, but it's like remote viewing. Everybody can do remote viewing to a certain extent. I think everybody, if they worked on it, would be able to do telepathy to a certain extent.
And it's a great tool for your own life.
Yes, it would be a great tool with your own wife. In fact, we were talking about that while playing bridge. You could see how the world would change even in ways like that. If you could do telepathy with your partner, that would change lots of games.
Have you met people who have developed it so well that it's almost uncanny?
Not telepathy, but remote viewing.
Right.
And I just haven't been around enough people where what they're focused on is telepathy, but I certainly have with remote viewing. And
you've been around some of the best.
That's exactly right. And when you see some of this stuff that a Joe McMonagle does or some of these other people, and in fact, the people I'm working with, common people who, you know, common in the sense that, you know, they're not super well known and maybe they've taken a few classes, but the amount of agreement that they will get sometimes, not every time, and I think that's why a lot of people have a hard time, scientists, accepting precognition, because it doesn't work every time, but it certainly works often enough that it's been proven scientifically, statistically, and then all you have to see is a few of these, like, perfect matches, right-on matches, and you know that consciousness, the capabilities of consciousness, are so much greater than we usually give credit.
Marty Rosenblatt with us. Does telepathy have anything to do with distance? The closer you are, the better it is, or not?
I think the answer to that is no. In fact, I was just reading about some experiments that were done, run by Harvard, and they went between, I can't remember the two countries, but they said they were over 1,000 miles apart. And it's just like remote viewing, because you see the explanation, and that's why I really believe the kind of explanation I gave is what it is, because it ties together so many of the psychic phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, with remote viewing, as you know, Marty, you're there instantly.
Exactly. That's a kind of time travel, isn't it?
It is.
It really is.
It is. There's no doubt about that.
It's a little bit like thought. You know, think about your last trip to Europe. Well, you know, you're there. And consciousness has this capability of what we physicists would call non-locality, but it's instant communication.
How did you get involved in this in the first place?
Back in, like, mid-1970s, I saw this paper by these guys called Pudoff and Targ, where they talked about remote viewing. It was one of their major papers in the IEEE. And at that point in time...
Had they gone public by that time with what they did with the government?
A little bit, yeah. Just a little bit, but they never talked about it in terms of the classified stuff.
Okay.
But they had, I think it was called Mind Race, was one of their first books. So this was right after that. And what they published was remote viewing, precognition, which was the most controversial, actually. But I had contacts at that point because I was a contractor to the government, you know, doing my high-energy work, nuclear clouds, and work for NASA and that sort of thing. But I had contacts with the DIA. So I went to them and said, you know what, you guys really got to look at this. This is kind of amazing. Only later, and they sent me to SRI, and I met Pudoff and Targ actually in like the mid-70s or so. And of course, I was just so impressed. The first time I'd ever seen
great guys
do scientific experiment on something like remote viewing. You know, everything is sort of, you like the science. You really do. When you can do it, you like the science.
Had you ever met Ingo Swann before he passed on, obviously?
Yeah, I met him several times at IRVA conferences, and I tried to actually get him involved in associative remote viewing. He basically said, been there, done that.
Yeah, what a great guy. Heck, Harold Puthoff, he is 81 years old himself.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
I mean, they're all getting up there in age.
A lot of the...
Russell Targ is 83.
Yep, yep. And Joe must be in the 70s at least. And I, whenever I can, I do like to work with these guys, and I like to share with my people, have them get on, you know, we do webinars and stuff like that, and I love to have them there because in our defense community, we used to call them graybeards. These guys have so much knowledge.
Oh, my gosh,
and
yeah.
You just want to pass that on.
Yeah.
To,
you don't want to lose it.
Yeah, exactly.
Marty, let's talk a little bit about precognitive remote viewing, as we call it, time traveling, basically. Mm-hmm. But when you, with precognitive remote viewing, how far out can you go in terms of time? Is it limitless?
I believe it is. There have been some experiments, which at Princeton University, they had an outfit there called PEER, and they went out about 2 weeks. I'm actually doing experiments now in our group, the AppliedPrecog.com group. We're doing experiments now which go out to a month or more. And, in fact, the longest ones we've done are about a year. We happened to predict correctly that Hillary Clinton was not going to be president, and we just now finished a prediction that Trump would, in fact, be president a year from his inauguration. If you remember, a year ago, there was a lot of talk about
impeachment and everything
impeachment
else.
Sure. Or assassination. And so we go out, a year is about as far as we've gone. But I really, there's no limit. Once you get that you can go in the future and you accept that, time is not linear. You can, it's really as if this eternal now concept. It's like all out there now. Our conscious minds can only go moment to moment to moment to moment. But, it's not predetermined. We always end off when I say something like that, that it's out there now, the future, that it's predetermined. But it's more like, you see, we don't understand time. There's a place outside of time, this universal collective consciousness, where we're actually helping to create that. It's fixed but not fixed. From its perspective, it does know everything.
If you're a precognitive remote viewer, does that mean you're psychic?
Yes. It's what is called a psychic capability.
Okay.
I definitely prefer that over paranormal. I hate paranormal because this is a normal capability of human beings. I think animals have it as well.
Some people have it developed better than others.
Exactly, and it's something which you can learn. We have lots of people who we can see. We keep a lot of data. That's one of the things we do.
All right, hang with us for a second, Marty. We're going to take a quick break. Marty Rosenblatt with us. His website, AppliedPrecog.com, is linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com. Next hour, we'll take phone calls on these subjects, telepathy and remote viewing. We'll come back. Welcome back. Marty Rosenblatt with us. Marty, how do you know how accurate one is when you're doing precognitive remote viewing if the remote viewing is years away from now?
Well, there has to be an outcome in what we do. Again, the associative remote viewing always has an outcome. So we ask yes, no questions. You know, will Hillary Clinton be president of the United States in 2000, whatever it was?
16.
But in December. That's a yes, no question. Will Trump still be president a year from his inauguration? That's a yes, no question. So no matter how far out we ask the question.
Who do you ask the question to?
Remote viewers.
Okay.
Who have decided that they want to use their remote viewing skills to predict something in the future, but what they're actually predicting is the a description of what we call a photo site. When you look at a photo, you can tell, like, if there's action in the photo, you can look at it, and if there's, like, running water, you will hear sounds. The human senses are able to all report about a photo site, a picture, but at the time the picture was taken, what was going on there. And that's what they do. That it keeps it interesting as opposed to just guessing up, down. That doesn't work as well as describing a location, which, you know, could be anything that you could take with a photograph.
But couldn't you have, though, some precognitive remote viewing even before these people were announced as candidates? We didn't even know that Donald Trump was going to be there, let's say. Or you know, we kind of figured Hillary, but could they have predicted who that person might have been when there was no announcement prior to?
Well, I mean, I think you would have to have, I mean, if you ask someone, like, describe for me the president in 2000.
Right, exactly.
They could maybe give a description of that person, and then you could tell how accurate that description would be.
I see a T in his last name, something like that.
They might do that, and they might say she versus he. Who knows if it's far enough in the future?
Mm-hmm.
And they could pick up that sort of thing. But I have to tell you, doing something like that, the judging is hard. How well did the person do? What I love about associative remote viewing is that you always get a yes or no answer. You always get a hit or a miss. And remote viewing in general is just not perfect. That's why, you know, many years ago I'd always hoped we'd be able to apply it to things like earthquakes, to natural disasters, but it's not perfect. And
why not, though? Why is it not perfect?
Well, I think there's a global uncertainty principle. You know,
is there something pulling it down from people, or, you know, is there a mass consciousness that hurts remote viewing?
Well, that's an interesting perspective, and there might very well be something like that. You see, the model I have of everything being entangled, but the issue then is that you get to control how strong those entanglements are. Now, sometimes that control is conscious. Very often it's subconscious, like the telepathy examples. You know, there are a lot of telepathies when somebody is hurt. The twin, for example, might know it, or another person, a loved
one, right, exactly,
might know it. They weren't trying to do it. But when you're purposefully doing remote viewing, precognitive remote viewing, it's just not perfect. And that's why statistics are so important. And we spend a lot of time keeping everybody's statistics, which helps them get better, but it also, we can then pick out what we call precog pros. We have people out there now that are earning money using their precognitive remote viewing capability.
Well, they're also working with police departments in places, yeah, like that, aren't they?
Oh, of course, and they're finding missing people. Pam Coronada is someone who I know quite well, and that's what she does. So, yes, remote viewers do many things. You know, Joe McMonico had a whole business on it for so many years. He's just retired. But he worked for many corporations giving information that was of interest to them.
If you were to MRI the brain of a good remote viewer, what would it look like, in your opinion, Marty? Do you know?
Well, about a year ago, we asked Ed May that, who's done experiments with that, and tried to find something special that went on with the remote viewer when they were right on target, which you knew, you know, afterwards. And he said they just have not yet been able to find a correlation. Now, that doesn't mean it's not going
to be not there, right,
in the future, but they haven't been able to nail something which is going on just when the remote viewers are, like, right on. which of course you would love to be able to do.
What would you say is more important, telepathy or precognitive remote viewing, if you had a choice?
Precognitive remote viewing.
That's what you'd rather have.
But
how come?
But let me also add, precognition, and Ed May again, I don't know if you know him, but he's one of the scientists, goes back to the SRI days.
Way back, yeah.
He took over after Hal Pudoff left, and he's still working in the field. So he's probably the longest working scientist in the field, and he's just done all kinds of stuff. He basically said all psi can be explained by precognition, which I thought was interesting. He gave a qualifier about macro PK, but after my thinking about it, I will even put that in that category, because if you think about what precognition is, you only know if you were right or wrong when whatever it is you predicted either happens or doesn't happen or partially happens. And so the feedback for all psi is critical, right?
I think I had May on as a guest 4 years ago, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, okay.
His first name's Edwin, isn't it?
Yep, Edwin
yep.
May.
That's
yep.
him. Okay.
Yep. And he's written a paper where that was one of the main topics, is precognition explains psi. And I agree with that, because with the model I outlined with this universe of collective consciousness, you, whatever it is that you're doing by going deep, getting access, I think, to the communication that's associated somehow through an interface with a zero-point energy field, and then this universal collective consciousness. Now, maybe it works through this field, but I frankly think this even connects up with ETs, if you don't mind me bringing that up.
And explain that. What do you mean by that?
Okay. Imagine our civilization a million years from now, 10,000 years from now. You know the way science is going, still going exponentially in terms of our learning. It's kind of amazing. We're not far away from having quantum computers. And imagine quantum computers with artificial intelligence combined. It's just going to... The science is going to keep going. So the kind of questions which the ETs may have answered, including some that we may not have even thought of yet, could be so advanced that they now have mastered things like, say, PK. Let's say they've mastered not only time travel in the sense of precognition, which we know a lot about, but imagine now, a million years from now, maybe they will be very close to 100%. That's going to make them very different.
While also very powerful, too.
And very powerful. And take a look at what we're seeing in the UFO field with the observations of these vehicles, which are not really, they're observed. And, you know, these guys went away from unidentified flying object because they don't act like objects in the physical world.
They're strange. They're strange.
They don't have sonic booms. They can make right turns. And there's some physics going on there that we don't understand.
I think they're dimensional. They're coming from some other place.
Well, I agree with you. Our multidimensional approach of the words we use, I think it might have more to do with this consciousness.
If consciousness, could be.
If consciousness is indeed fundamental, imagine if you learned how to materialize things. You know, and there have been some examples of that where actually human beings have moved without traveling in between. Okay, it's teleportation. And there's some evidence for that.
What is retrocausality?
Okay. Retrocausality is really precognition from a different perspective. Imagine a remote viewing experiment where a person is supposed to describe something that he sees in the future. Like the experiments they did at SRI. Let's take those, because those are pretty simple.
All right.
There'd be double, triple blind. Somebody would make a prediction, and then they go out to the site and see it. And the prediction was, let's say, really, really good. But the guy didn't know that until he got out to the site. Now think about this. He gets out to the site. He's got his transcript. He is now retro-causing what he put on his transcript from the fact that he's got his feedback. So when you look at the future and you say, I've now had some effect on the past because I got this great transcript, it comes, at least partially, from being at the feedback site. And so that's like information going backwards in time. But in fact, it's really an entangled, non-local handshake. That's sort of the best way I can put it.
Is there a science behind this, Marty, do you think?
Absolutely. I think the problem with the science is it's not mathematical. In terms of being able to mathematically write down equations for precognition, but things like non-locality from quantum mechanics, things like entanglement from quantum mechanics, those concepts fit beautifully with precognition and remote viewing.
Time travel, how does that fit into this?
Okay. Information time travel, that's precognition, right? When you're getting information
yes.
from the future.
Yes.
Physical time travel, now we know of things like time warps, wormholes. You know, we've all seen movies where you go through like a Stargate and you're suddenly someplace else.
Instantly.
That's right. Instantly, non-locally. But there's also other theories that are allowed by the general relativity where space deforms such that you're not going faster than the speed of light, but the deformation is such that look at that space normally, you are going faster than the speed of light. But so general relativity, our understanding of our physical world allows time to be quite different than the normal linear time that we think about.
Can you manipulate time and space with remote viewing? Can you change things?
Let's be careful about change, because I believe the fundamental nature of this, of consciousness, this UCC matrix of consciousness, is based on the now moment. If you think about your consciousness, right now we're talking.
Right.
And we're absolutely certain of this now moment. You know, what we talked about a half an hour ago, you know, that's gone. What we're going to be talking a half an hour from now doesn't have the same strength as this now moment. And I don't believe you can change any now moment. It happens as a now moment. It's a conscious now moment and stored that way. What you can do is change directions of motion, because now you're going over, you know, it's like a force can change a moving body. But so you can modify direction by actions you take in this now moment, but you can't like change the future. You're creating the future with everything that you do.
Have you had any remote viewers, Marty, that have gone into the future and have come back horrified?
Okay, the closest I know of that, and it's a marvelous story, is Mel Riley, and you probably know his name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever interviewed him, but he was one of the guys that worked in the unit. He had a bi-location experience. Now, that means he's sitting in an office someplace, and he's been asked to describe a scene, and I think this one was it might have been a Civil War place. He was supposed to describe one of the battles. He bilocated there. He went there, and he had a duck because he was being shot at. He said there was sand, and he felt the sand going into his face. Now, one other part of that, which I think is really fascinating, is he said he made eye contact with one of the other soldiers who looked quite surprised. Mel came back, and of course, you know, he still talks about that as being one of his peak experiences. So he went into the past, came back, had this bilocation experience, and may very well influence somebody there who might have seen him as a ghost. I don't know what that other person's response was, but once you can move not only information, but actually get a physical presence someplace, you're getting close to maybe manifesting partially in our physical world things like UFOs. They're not full objects.
They blink on and blink off, don't they?
Well, they, you know, there's so many reports, and what we just saw, the beginning of what I hope is true disclosure, with Hal and this guy named Eric Davis.
That's right, about the CIA and everything else. Marty, we're at the top of the hour. We're coming back for more and phone calls next.